Wednesday afternoon, time for this week's Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt here, ready to saddle up the bicycle and trek across the middle of Alaska, for crying out loud.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. I'm going to read this poem first, because I wanted to do this last time, but I got ahead of myself. You know, there's that old expression, the older I get, the better I was.
Mm.
And then there are the guys who never learn, even in middle age, that pickup games are supposed to be fun, and you might want to look at it that way. This is
remember that well, because I hung in there with basketball, especially pickup basketball, until my, I think, early 50s, till I blew up my Achilles, and it kind of scared me a little bit. But yeah, there were still, yeah, there were guys that I would play with in their 40s.
They're going to dunk over you because they're six.
Yeah, or you know, throwing elbows and.
Well, I think you'll really appreciate this. This is called Give Ernie the Ball. Ernie wants the ball. It's just a pickup game, 3-on-3, shirts and skins. But no matter the circumstances, he's there to dominate, to be the big guy, even though Lamar and Pony are taller. His hands are spread and poised for the catch. And if Lamar doesn't pass the damn thing, he'll set fire to the kid with a long incendiary stare. And when he does get the ball, he goes to that rusty hoop without looking for a teammate with a better shot or caring a hoot for anyone who deigns to play defense. This is his life. The moves, the layup, even the thump of his elbow into the unsuspecting stomach of Kenny, the boy whose old man owns a grocery store. Most of all, it's the attempted dunk, the jump that fails to even touch the rim, the leap that's fired by dreams, and the extra spring in his step that the future's waiting to provide. Ernie has to have the ball. If he doesn't have the ball, then what's the point of it all? Ernie wants the ball. So kids with richer lives, make sure he gets it.
When I knew Ernie, his name, well, a former media celebrity who we know well, he used to come to some of our pickup basketball games, and we would refer to him as the Bermuda Triangle, because once you gave him the ball, it would never be seen
never
again.
Never be seen again. Yeah, this guy is John Gray. He's an Australian poet who lives in the U.S., and I don't know anything about John Gray, but I'm going to see if John Gray, by any chance, has a collection of poems, and if there are a bunch of them that are sports poems, because I bet they're pretty good. But yeah, that was from back in the winter of 2015.
Do you know who that could have been, Carrie?
I have a couple of guesses.
Could you describe them, perhaps, without giving any names away?
I don't know that I could.
Okay. All right. I mean, I would say it on the air. I would say it to his face, I think. Probably Wayne. What? Whoops. Whoops. Was that who you were guessing?
The line about even though they were both taller than he.
Yeah. Yes.
Feels
yes.
like I have yes. that's immediately in oh, yes. my mind. Yep. But yes.
We would kind of, everybody else would. The other thing was, it was an established game. Same group of guys that had played together for years. And, you know, there's sort of an unwritten rule that when you join a game like that, you earn your place.
Exactly.
And, you know, you pass the ball, you play defense, you set some picks. If you get an open shot, sure. But, you know, you don't take the inbounds pass.
And dribble it straight down the court right. and go. Yeah. I used to play when we lived out in Central New York State, when Jan and I, not long after we were first married, I used to play a lot of pickup hockey in this rink. And there was one guy that would just never pass the puck. He would get a puck behind the net, and he would skate down. He'd skate around. He was a pretty good skater. And one day, a bunch of us were sort of sick and tired of it. We said, you know, you never pass. He goes, yeah, I know. So the next time he came out from around the net, he got decked by two of his own guys on his own side. I said, that's how we have to get the puck from you, huh? He never came back.
Now, I can use the basketball analogy, and I don't know what it would be in hockey. And Wayne, I don't think Wayne did this. Maybe he did. But I don't remember this part. But there are also those guys annoying in pickup games where you call your own fouls, the guys who every time they miss a shot, they call a foul.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got fouled. I got hit. No, you missed a shot.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things,
is almost more annoying than never passing the ball.
One of the things we used to do in hockey, because we pick up hockey, is if you inadvertently, we were allowed to do checking, but you weren't supposed to, like, you know, if somebody's head's down, you just let the check go.
Right.
You know, and you try not to throw people up on your hip to get, you know, you just, you check, you bump into one another. And if you did something you thought was really too hard, you just take the puck and shovel it back to the guy and say, sorry, man, and keep going. This one guy, never, ever, ever could you bump into him. He was the biggest guy out there. Always complaining, always slashing people. If you hacked at his stick a little bit, he was all set, ready to fight you and stuff, right? It's like, just go away. You know, we're having fun here.
There you go. All right, let's talk bicycling.
Wheels on Ice. You know, every time we get a new cycling book, there's some amazing thing that happened that I knew nothing about that blows me away. In 1899, in the month of March, a person by the name of Ed Jessen, who lived in Dawson, was a proprietor of what they call roadhouses. And from Dawson all the way over to Nome, every 10, 12, 15 miles, there was a place people, mushers, could pull off with their dog teams and rest for the night or whatever. And this was how commerce was done. All the commerce was done at that time by dog stuff, because the bays were frozen in winter, so they couldn't come up from California with stuff until later in the year. So this guy sees a bicycle, and he's done all right. He's been in the Klondike, and he's made some money. The bicycle costs $150 in 1899. $150.
Wow.
So he buys it, and he learns to sort of ride it. But he's decided that he's not going to take the dogs. Not just go with the dogs. He's going to ride a bicycle and tow the sled and do all this kind of stuff. And he makes it from Dawson to Nome. The next year, another guy will do the same thing, then go from Point Barrow on the north slope of Alaska all the way down to Nome. And these guys are like going out in 35 and 40 degree below days where they have to warm the bike up somewhere so they can turn the... They break pedals. They have to make pedals out of wood. They do. I mean, I would never, ever have the guts. They're riding across rivers where the sun has melted the first inch of water, but there's, 10 feet of ice underneath it. Oof. But they have to ride so really slowly. Why? Because those old bikes didn't have fenders on the back.
Wow.
So if they ride too fast, it's like 0 degrees out and they're splashing water on themselves. But these guys made it. No, and they would sometimes have to ride. And this is the day of what we call the safety bike. Looks like the modern bike, but you have to pedal backwards to slow down. Now, you don't have brakes in them, but you have a chain and all that kind of thing. So they this guy started out in Dawson, and I want to say it was middle of February, and he gets to Nome on March 30th. So 6 weeks to go. And people, if you don't know what that is, get a map and find the Yukon Territory. Dawson will be on the west side, about halfway up, and Nome is all the way across Alaska. We're talking about riding a bicycle in winter all the way across Alaska. And the guy miraculously had no flat tires. There were days where the cold, he had to pump it up. He had to have an air pump. Broke his handlebars and had to fashion some, and then somebody else helped him fix that after that. But the characters these guys meet along the way, he could make 60 to 100 miles on a good trail in one day.
Oh.
Following the dog mushers, because they would pack it down. and he would sometimes ride at night if the moon was good, and then sleep in the day if it wasn't so good. Then the second guy decides that he's gonna, and there's this kind of hysterical stories about how he, one place he stopped and he asked the guy if he had anything to eat. He said, all I got left is caribou stew. And he said, okay, that'd be great. I'll have some caribou stew. And he's eating, boy, these are small bones for a caribou. And it gets down around a little farther, and the guy says, oh, you ate at Muskrat Jim's, right? He always tells you it's caribou, it's all muskrat. But as Carrie will probably tell you, they eat muskrat in New Orleans. They call it, they have Nutria down there, a little bit different than northern muskrat. I've had muskrat, it's all right. I've had caribou, which is tremendous. I think I'd know the difference. But they would wear like three sets of gloves, three sets of socks, bundle themselves up in all kinds of stuff, and then hunch over a bicycle and tow stuff behind them. You know, I mean, it was because they wanted to find a faster way than dog sled and a cheaper way. Because if the bike stands up, you don't have to feed the bike, you know?
That's right.
Then the next one, this first article, which was about Edward Jessen, was reconstructed from his diary by someone read later, and they don't change any of the spellings or misspellings. There are some things that we would not certainly say today regarding indigenous people and the like. But she didn't try and sanitize it. She tried to give it this. And these are some of the things, just an idea. Next morning, I believe it was 23rd of February, and the thermometer down to 48 below. It was almost impossible to get William started. This is the guy he's going with. The rubber tires on my wheel were frozen hard and stiff as gas pipe. The oil in the bearings was frozen, so I could scarcely ride it, and my nose was freezing, and I had to hold the handlebars with both hands, not being able yet to ride with one hand and rub my nose with the other. I threw the wheel in the shed and told Williams to get in also, and that we were willing to stop at 27 in the sled, 27 Mile Roadhouse, when we got there. So every once in a while, the weather was so bad that he had to get on the dog sled with this other guy and carry the bike. Nobody had seen a bicycle up there at that point in time, except a few Americans.
When is this?
1899.
Wow.
What happened in February of 1899 was the end of the Spanish-American War, that, you know, two-month William Hearst War. He had all the newspapers that detailed that because he got them before he left Dawson. Nobody out on the way knew, so they would ask him any news of the war, and he'd say, well, yeah, you know, you want to read some newspapers? And they would give him money to read the news. People would stay up all night reading the newspapers because they hadn't seen a newspaper.
Wow.
In forever. Then another guy did it in 1900, and then he also went from Barrow down to Nome, and he arrived. He was so snowblind he could barely see. He had to go sit in the dark for a number of days. He had his skin was badly cut and burned because of the sun hitting off the snow. He had lost 20 pounds. He goes, but I still tipped the scales at 230. So a guy who weighed 250 pounds is riding a bicycle down from there. And so what will happen later, and we'll talk about this in ensuing weeks when I get a little bit better grip on exactly how they did it, they then came up with the idea that in the summertime they should have an Iditabike. And they now have that every year that you ride from Dawson to Nome over the Iditarod Trail. Now, sounds like, oh, nice in summer, but it's summer in Alaska, and the bugs are pernicious. The mudslides can be unbelievable. You can still hit ice and snow on any, you know, it could happen in the middle of July in part of it. And as bicycles get better and better, now people are trying to do these things faster and faster. Who's going to be the first person to ride from, you know, Nome to Point Barrow in a certain amount of time? The cover picture, which I wish we could show people, is of a modern snow bike, these fat tire bikes. I run into their tracks up in the woods by our house. And, you know, we have down and we have all the kinds of things that make we can stay so much warmer. And we have waterproof boots that we don't have to put bear grease on our felt boots to try and keep the water out. It reminded me, reading these things, of the books we read about the Bunyan Derbies, when people ran across the United States. Day almost nonstop with 4 days off, run 3,400 miles, averaging 45 miles a day. That was all for a prize. This was every once in a while to, you know, maybe get up there and get a stake in the gold rush and the like. But for the most part, it was like, I think I'd like to try that.
Yeah,
the authors are, it's edited by Jessica Cherry. The person who first brought the book together was a guy named Frank Seuss, who unfortunately died in a cycling accident at age 72 before the book came out. But they went to the old sources, to these old diaries and the like, and the stories of people who first did it, and then it moves chronologically forward so that the last stories are contemporary ones. And there's some this book has some incredible pictures. I mean, wow. I can't imagine cycling there, right? The squalid conditions that they sometimes lived in, and the fact that they sometimes had to like put the bike on a giant log floating somewhere with them and pole across an open part of a river. No, at that point, I wait for the boat. Springtime's coming, wait for the ice to melt. So it's called Wheels on Ice, Stories of Cycling in Alaska. And I introduce it this week because it, like Replays, Rivalries, and Rumbles, I think we'll be reading talking about a number of these stories over the next little bit.
Excellent. Thank you, Bruce.
My pleasure, sir.
Sports Lit 101 every Wednesday here on Downtown.